Ever catch yourself eating the same flavorless dinner 3 days in a row? Dreaming of something better? Well, HelloFresh is your guilt-free dream come true, baby. It's me, Keke Palmer. Let's wake up those taste buds with hot, juicy pecan-crusted chicken or garlic butter shrimp scampi. Mm. Hello Fresh. Stop dreaming of all the delicious possibilities and dig in at HelloFresh.com. Let's get this dinner party started.
Tired of ads interfering with your favorite sports podcasts? Good news. Ad-free listening is available on Amazon Music for all the music plus top podcasts included with your Prime membership. Stay ahead of the game by downloading the Amazon Music app for free or go to amazon.com/sportsadfree. That's amazon.com/sportsadfree to catch up on the latest episodes without the ads.
Cool fact, a crocodile can't stick out its tongue. Also, you can get health insurance for a month or just under a year in some states. United Healthcare short-term insurance plans, underwritten by Golden Rule Insurance Company, offer flexible, budget-friendly coverage for you. Learn more at uh1.com.
On Headstrong, we are very pleased and proud to be partnered with the CBD brand, The Good Level. Now, I've been taking CBD for about 18 months to maintain my mental well-being, but it's been very difficult to find a brand that I can trust because there's so many faceless foreign brands out there and you're not sure what you're buying or how it's sourced. Luckily, I found two guys, Joe and Johnny, who have created this wonderful brand called The Good Level. What's so great about these guys is that they support British farming. Many brands import their CBD from America, but The Good Level say they don't rely on the methods by farmers that they've never met nor the farms that they've never seen. They have a really close relationship with their farmers who are in Somerset, meaning they know how their product is produced from start to finish. They're the first CBD company I found who put a face on the brand, and they're transparent with the whole process of how they create their products. And they've even got their own podcast where they look at the latest research on CBD. To check them out, go to their Instagram at the.good.level. And drop them a message if you want to find out more about CBD. And for 15% off their products, use Headstrong15 on their website for checkout. Hello and welcome back to another episode of Headstrong. My name is Louis Strong and I host this podcast. Now, Headstrong is a podcast where I sit down with a number of individuals in the public eye to talk to them about their lives and their careers. But notably, I want to talk to them about their vulnerabilities, to understand what the word headstrong means to them. We are currently in season 6 and it's going very, very well with some wonderful guests. But today's guest is pretty awesome indeed. I am joined by Britain's best skier, Dave Riding. Now, Dave and I had a chat during his off time from last season and before going into the next season to talk about how he got into skiing and indeed his experiences with being on the road on his own and the challenges that he faces day in and day out. So I really hope you enjoy this episode of Headstrong. Dave, thank you very much for joining me on Headstrong. How's it all going?
Yeah, it's going all right. Into the summer training. It never seems to stop. It just seems like deja vu. You finish one season, you start the next, and then you're looking forward to the season already. So yeah, going all right. Training away. Heading back on snow pretty soon.
Yeah, as you say, it does all just swing around, doesn't it? Now, I am starting this series in a kind of unique way, and I'm asking every guest, not about where they are or what's going on at the moment, but actually how you're feeling. How are you doing at the moment?
I'm doing all right. I think with everyone, there's been a lot of uncertainty around the last year. So I think everyone's feeling the strain of, not being able to do what they want, having to live under restrictions, and it's probably grinding on a lot of people. I was fortunate that we had a race season, but it was a stressful one. And yeah, I think like anyone itching for life to be back to what was the norm. and hopeful that it will return this summer. We shall see.
Yeah, absolutely. Well, before we do crack on, a massive thank you to my friends Nick and George for helping facilitate this. And we did touch base, as you say, actually back in December, but you were mid-season, very busy, definitely not the top of your list to be speaking to me. But here we are now, which is great. But it's come to the end of the season. We're talking, as you say, in between with the build-up already on the next season. But I'm curious to ask you, what is that feeling like at the end of a season? Those emotions and your body as well. Are you just happy for a break? Or, as you say, is it ready already looking into the next one?
It really depends how the season's gone. Over the years, I'm 34 now, so I've had a lot of different emotions at the end of the season. Generally, if it's been a good season, you're normally willing the end to come so that you can have a break because, the seasons are long. We start in November, we finish at mid-March, and we race quite often. Not most weekends, but we have to make sure that we're in form or as good a form we can be for 4 months. So it's very strenuous. By the time that the season end is upon us, emotionally really drained, dealing with the stresses of competing, dealing with the pressures of competing and you've got to perform. So mentally it's a long season. Physically, normally okay. I tend to pick up one or two little niggles as such, but nothing that's really stopped me performing. So yeah, it's you're longing for the rest. And normally I would try and go away for 2 weeks just to be on a beach somewhere and just chill out. The last 2 years we haven't been able to do that. So yeah, it is a bit different. And it's not easy to totally switch off because after the season I'm sitting at home twiddling my thumbs thinking, oh, let's start training. And it's not always the smartest thing to do to start training too soon. So yeah, it's getting that balance. But if you've had a bad season, it's normally fuel to the fire and you're itching to get going again.
Yeah, I can totally imagine. We will come on to talk about that mentality in greater detail, definitely further through the show. But I'm intrigued to ask you about your physical condition and how you maintain your physicality in the off season, because of course you're not doing what your role is, but you have to kind of still be hitting the gym, doing conditioning. Is that the case?
Yeah. I tend to have 2 weeks completely off and then about 2 weeks where I'm just kind of doing whatever I want in terms of, like, if I fancy going out for a bike ride, I'll go out for a bike ride. I try and do a gym session once a week so I don't totally lose that and come back to it stiff as hell. But yeah, it's a lot of gym work, a lot of cardio work. With skiing, the race days are like 7 hours long. And while our race runs are only a minute long normally, there's a lot in between. So fitness is really key. And to be able to maintain your focus for the whole day is tough, as well as the body. So yeah, we do a lot of work, gym work, biking, running, all sorts. We do everything really. We're not that specific. We have to do a lot.
Now, I'm very keen to kind of take this chronologically because it makes the most sense to me. And so I have no doubt you've probably already talked about this a million times in your life, but to the rogue listener of Headstrong listening to this, who's never heard of you, the question is, when did you first put skis on your feet?
I remember my first ski lesson. It was I was 6 and a half, Pendle Ski Club in Lancashire. My parents basically said, to come on holiday with us in the winter, you have to learn to ski. We're not waiting around for you. So good incentive to get going. 6 and a half years old, went up to Pendle, and I absolutely loved it from the first lesson. I think a lot of it's to do with the instructor at the time, a lovely lady called Jeanette. And I was just itching to get back up there and go again. And it just kind of progressed and went through beginners, intermediate, advanced, and then was invited to the race club up there. And then, coming from a competitive family, everyone seems to be competitive, which is quite exhausting now. But when I was young, it really I really wanted to try the racing. And while I did other sports, skiing was always like the family's passion almost. My dad had never raced, but he just loved skiing. So that was where the passion was. And so obviously more time was spent skiing than say football, even though I loved football. Sometimes I wonder why I chose skiing, but yeah.
I mean, you are in a very unique position as a professional athlete here in the UK, because a lot of these sports, as you're talking about there, football, you can go outside and play it. But here, unlike the States, Switzerland, France, Austria, we don't have that luxury to that extent. So was that a challenge for you growing up? Did you see that as a challenge, or was it all you ever knew?
It was, yeah, it was exactly that, all I ever knew. Fortunately, where I learned to ski was a members-run club. It was very affordable. I think it was £3.50 a session 30 years ago. And ski hire was not peanuts. So, yeah, it was all I ever knew. I didn't even really know about the alpine world of racing until I was in my early teenage years, which wasn't ideal because it meant I never really started training on the snow until I was 12 or 13. I can't remember, but yeah, it did mean I was a bit behind, but yeah, it was all I ever knew. It was, I just loved it. And just in my little dry slope bubble.
Did you feel that held you back, or was it just part of the parcel?
It was just the way I have done it. It certainly held me back in the sense I was behind. Like when I first started racing international races, I remember being, well, the very first race I did in sort of juniors where you race in all ages, I was 33 seconds behind the winner of the race, who was Noel Baxter at the time. And when the race is only 1 minute 40 or 50 long, being 33 seconds behind is quite a lot. So I was quite happy with that. I remember counting the Brits ahead of me. There was about 34 Brits ahead of me, and I was pretty happy. I was 34th best junior in Britain as such. So yeah, I was deluded for sure, because I just didn't know, but enjoyed it at least.
Yeah, for sure. How does one progress then through the junior levels of skiing? So talk to me as if I know nothing, which is probably fairly accurate as well. What are the kind of the challenges of getting through the kind of the route into professional skiing in the UK?
I knew nothing as well when I was, say, 16, 17. I joined a club. They would go on ski camps in their school holidays. It was very fun at the time. It wasn't that serious. And then I progressed to, I changed clubs because at the time, my initial club wasn't going to a certain race. So I just went away with another club, and I made some good progress to the point where after 1 or 2 years, I got selected for the England team, which means they bring together like the best people who are still in education in England and set up a team for them. So then you could travel Europe easier and much more, not professional, certainly wasn't professional level, but it was, there was a pathway that I followed. It was just step by step. And there was always this pathway onto the next team, onto the next program. And it's just like any sport, I guess. It's the progression as you go, and you're just naturally looking for the next step.
So speaking of that progression, then, when did it turn from a passion and a hobby into a drive and pursuit of a career? When was that kind of a reality?
I was always competitive, and I was always good on the dry ski slopes. So I always had this desire to be a ski racer. I didn't realize how far away from the top I actually was. And looking back now, I was miles away. But my parents, rightly so, they made me go to college, get my A-levels. So I did that. And then they said, right, you can have 1 year where you go to Austria, which was with a British development team, and see how you go. If you do well, then we'll pursue it. And if you don't, then you can go to uni. I got a place at Loughborough, deferred it for 1 year, and did quite well in my first year. So I got onto the British team after that, and the rest was kind of history. I just stuck with it, and each year tried to get better. And yeah, I guess when I went full time, that was when it was like, right, this is serious, and this is where I've really got to dedicate my life. I think I was 17 or 18 to this sport, and that's what I've done since. So yeah, another 17 years later, and I'm still chipping away.
Still going. Yeah. Absolutely. Now, it'd be interesting to hear your thoughts on this. So let's say it's been 17 years then, as you say there, for you since you got into the professional realm of international skiing. What's that kind of been like now, looking at it 17 years later, on how it has developed, the infrastructure has developed to get into skiing? Has it improved in the UK?
To get into skiing, it's very similar. You go to your local dry slope, now we have snow as well on the indoor ski halls. We've got 5, which is definitely an advantage. In terms of the pathway, it's similar. Maybe it's gone more down the route of academies, which I don't always agree with. I wish there was still the pathway that I took, because it was very affordable and worked for me. So obviously I'm going to be biased towards that. Mm. The thing that has changed is the federation now is in a much, much better position. When I went to my first Olympics, the federation actually went into administration a month before in 2010. So, I mean, that was fantastic. But yeah, it was one of the hurdles that you had to overcome. Now the federation is in a very solid position. We have good coaches, we have good teams, we have good infrastructure. Everything that I need now is there. So that over the last 11 years, that's what's changed the most. And that's what is, I've had the same coach for 10 years, which has been really good. But we've been able to bring on servicemen to tune the ski, so I don't have to do that for 2 hours every afternoon, and just much more professional now than what we maybe were in 2010.
Physical and mental well-being are so important and come hand in hand. I'm incredibly proud to be sponsored by the CBD brand, The Good Level, who have well-being at the very forefront of what they do as a company and a brand. They offer CBD oils, balms, and jellies, all of which are full spectrum and extracted by a cold press. Their oils are all made with extra virgin olive oil from Kalamata, and that makes them so much tastier than any other that I've tried before. Their balms have a fantastic smell as well, and are great to use on your skin or any pain you're experiencing. And of course, their jellies taste so great for any sweet tooths. They also have a commitment to sustainability, pledging to plant at least 500 trees every year, along with ensuring all their packaging is recyclable. So if you want to check The Good Level out, go to their Instagram page at the.good.level, where you can find out all about their products. And if you'd like a discount, feel free to use HEADSTRONG15 at checkout on their website. I'm intrigued to hear what you think of this, actually, just going from what you've said there, because it sounds like skiing has just become, almost become a luxury kind of adventure sport. Would you agree with that, in the sense that it's become less accessible in the way that you did it? Because that's something, for 350 ago back then, that you'd go, I'll do that, let's go do it. But now it seems like, it's a bit more difficult and challenging.
Yeah, so Pendle's still going. You basically, back in the day, you joined for 20 quid, and then it was a non-profit organization, really. That's still going. I don't know how much it is for a session, but over 30 years, it won't be £3.50. That's for sure. It'll probably double it. But yeah, still, that's good. I mean, the thing that has changed in terms of the making it more expensive is the academies. They're very professionally run, don't get me wrong. But I look back and think, could I have afforded that? And I don't know the answer, because times have changed as well. So I'd like to think I could just about have done it. My whole family came together to do the way that I did it, as well as my sister. So yeah, there's definitely, where's a will, there's a way. In terms of going skiing though, it's probably cheaper now with the cheap flights. You can find, there's all sorts of websites where you can find accommodation cheaper than what you probably could have. So in terms of jetting out to Austria, or like where I'm based in Obergurgl, it depends where you want to stay. You can do it cheap, you can do it luxury. And the lift pass in Austria is generally cheaper than, say, France, so I'm a big advocate for Austria in that sense. So yeah, if you want luxury, you can pay for it. If you don't, you can do
it. You still can do it.
Yeah, for sure. If you want to go on holiday, absolutely.
Ah, oh, that's fair enough then. Now, of course, throughout your career, you have seen immense success, and you've seen a steady projection into kind of basically Britain's best skier, you know, and it's hands down and fair to say. But my question to you is, how do you manage and deal with the outside noise and the pressure that is on you? Because you do have enormous pressure being Britain's best skier. And indeed, sometimes Britain's only skier. And the UK are relying on you, because you look at people like Austria, they might have 20 races going. How do you cope with that?
Yeah, absolutely. I always say the easiest season I ever had was the season where I got my first podium. Everything was going right. I was improving race after race. Britain hadn't had anyone at that sort of level for 30-odd years getting a podium in World Cup. Alan Baxter was very close. He had a podium at the Olympics and fourth in the World Cup. But it had been quite some time. So the outside ski world as such in Britain was absolutely buzzing. I could feel it every single race on social media. And it was just, without being a pun, it was just snowballed. And it was a great season. Once I was at the top, then it became, well, why is Dave in 16th and not in the top 10? Or is Dave going to win this next race? That sort of thing became the norm. And it's then when a few bad races come around and people start questioning my performances. And that's when the pressure comes also from within. You expect more from yourself. The team expects from you. So your sponsors want good results. But that's part of any sport, I'd say. That comes from being at the top level, and that's what you've got to learn to deal with. So, yeah, I remember two seasons after my first podium, I didn't start the season great. I had, say, a 12th, which is fine, and a 20-something. And I remember people saying, like, I see social media, and I read, it's just natural, you read things. And people were saying, like, oh, is Dave... is this it? Has he peaked? Even after, I was in a race called Madonna, and I really liked the hill. And I was in about 27th after the first run. But I'd actually had a pretty good first run. It just happened that the piste, which doesn't normally happen, got faster and the light got better. So people from starting in the 40s, 50s were coming into the top 30. Yeah. So a lot of good races didn't even qualify for the second run, only 30 qualify. And I remember after the race reading things from after the first run, is Dave finished? Should he have been on? I'd actually switched models of skis. I've actually gone back now, but I'd switched onto a different brand of skis, and people were questioning me. And I remember standing at the start for my second run, and I would have put my house on a good second run, because I knew the hill was good. I knew I was starting good, and I ended up fourth. So, and then it goes from is Dave finished to Dave's going to win the next race. It's just nuts. But with experience, you learn that, you know, this, you can only control what you can control at the end of the day. And people will say, it's not, with social media is great in terms of exposure, but it's crazy in terms of people voicing opinions and things like that. And I think people forget that athletes do read it. I mean, it's more in the media now about, say, the racism and football and these sort of things. But yeah, the social media, while it's great, is also pretty intense, should we say.
So how have you learned to manage the social media side of things? Do you have like a rule now where you don't look at it the night before a race or during, or what's the
I certainly don't look at it during. I never take my phone, really. I just have it on some music. But you end up laughing. It was funny this year. After my podium, someone called me the King John Un of British ski racing. It was just like, I actually wrote back to him saying, I don't think you've got the right person here, mate, because it was nuts. But he was having it was funny. I was like, wow. And the younger lads were at the race and they were laughing, like, you're the King John Un of British ski racing. It was crazy. But I'm fortunate not to get abused, really. So I can laugh most of the things off that I've had said, or doubts. So yeah, I'm fortunate in that sense, but you do read it, but you learn to deal with it. I don't think I would ever learn to deal with such things as racism and things like that. That's a total different subject. But from the doubt, the pressure, the odd weird comments, you learn to deal with those.
So how do you block out that outside noise then? Do you have like specific techniques, or is it just a matter of do not look at it? Because obviously that is difficult in terms of discipline, isn't it?
Yeah, I look at it. I'm not bothered. And if you, most 95%, 99% of comments are positive, so it's totally fine normally, and you can like build from it, take it as motivation and things like that. But yeah, I don't mind looking at it.
Okay, from the other side of things then. So there is always going to be the outside noise, the media, the social media side of things that is going to naturally build pressure, whatever. But do you mount pressure on yourself? Are you an overthinker in that kind of regard?
Maybe a bit too much pressure from myself. I think it's come from wanting it a lot, putting everything I've got into it, and yeah, naturally wanting to stay at the top. So I'm constantly calculating where my ranking is or things like that, which a lot of other people don't do, which will relieve some of the pressure. But that's how I operate. And while over the last few years I have had to, or I have tried to change that, in the end, it's just not me. So I just generally, that's me. I put some pressure on myself, but at the same time, try and deal with it as well. You can always be better. And maybe my result this year, I had no pressure because I've not done great in a race before. So I was even doubting if I was over the hill and then I had a podium. So yeah, there's definitely ways I can do things better. But it's doing it bit by bit rather than chunks at a time, because that also doesn't work.
No, of course. I mean, there are times in your, like in one's career, generally, regardless of what job you're in, you know, where you're against the wall, you're up against it, you've got to hit deadlines, or you're just in a bad mindset, or you've got to get over your performances. When you do doubt yourself in your job, and then specifically for you with your job being skiing, how do you bounce back from that kind of self-doubt and learn to overcome it? So I suppose the question is, how do you train your mindset to overcome the doubt?
I tend to really analyze. If I've had a bad day, I tend to really analyze what's gone wrong, what I've done. You don't become a bad skier overnight. So it's about trying to get a decent sleep and then coming to the next day with 110%, whether it be training or whatever I'm doing, and just going all in. And that's how I'm generally, my coach and my assistant coach generally would agree that if I have a bad day in training, then the next day is normally good, because I'll just go all in. And maybe it takes a bit away from a race coming up if I've exerted a lot, but I try and turn it around as quickly as I can and just go. It doesn't always work, but if you go all in with something, then at least you know you're giving it your all.
Do you have any like techniques you do yourself in terms of breathing, or do you use Headspace or Calm or anything like that?
No, not really. I just go into my own little world, switch off from the outside or skiing, just watch something easy, take my mind off things, generally relaxes me. Have a good meal, speak to the girlfriend or fiance, I should say.
Yes, you should.
Back at home. Realize that what I do is quite privileged. Okay, it's hard work, but a lot of people would like to be in my shoes, and 6-7 years ago I would have given anything to be where I am. So putting things in perspective is the most important thing, I would say. And yeah, it's not the end. There's more important things than my skiing.
Thinking of it like that then, yeah. Do you ever think of skiing and then think of like alternate careers? Because you might, you know, I'm not saying that you do this, but I've spoken to professional sports people beforehand and they go, oh, do you know, I could have done this, you know, on those bad days. Do you ever had that thought, or have you actually always thought, no, I'm going to keep going till the body goes no?
I've always thought keep going till the body goes no. There would have been a time where I'd have to have stopped if it wasn't working out, because there is reality that, yeah, you need to pay some bills. You can't live at your mum and dad's all the time. So thankfully it worked out for me, but there was a stage where it's like, it's now or never. Yeah, I mean, I loved sport when I was young, so I played a lot of football and was generally quite good at quite a lot of sports because I just did a lot of sports. So yeah, I would have loved to have maybe played football, but equally so, I might not have made it in football. So it's really easy to think I could have done this or I could do that. I mean, me and my fiance opened a cafe 2 years ago, and I tell you, the real world isn't easy. And it really puts things into perspective of I'm in full control of my skiing. So yeah, I quite appreciate that. While I have coaches and people running programs, I'm in control of my body and I'm in control at that start gate of how I'm going to get to the bottom, and no one else. It's me and the mountain and the gates. So I quite appreciate that now.
Well, it's that comparison of individual versus team sport, isn't it? Where you are just kind of going back to that. It's the pressure on yourself. It is only you and the mountain and the skis, and that's it. As you say, you can put in everything into place behind the scenes by other people, but on the day, it's you and the mountain. That's
yeah,
that.
Exactly. And while now I've got some younger teammates, I had to do it all on my own until pretty much last year. So yeah, that's powerful to be able, on your own, because everything's the program and everything is tailored to you. But on a bad day, you've got to deal with it yourself. Whereas this year, I'd had a couple of bad races coming into Adelboden where I had my podium. The young guys were doing really well in the tier below. They came to the race to race as well, and they came with a good vibe. It really helped me turn my emotions around and made me think, you know what, these guys are doing great. I would love to be able to do, even if it's 1 or 2 years with them before I have to say enough's enough with my body, to just be part of a team, because I think it's going to be really powerful.
Well, that's really interesting then, because something that people probably don't know about skiing is you spend a lot of time on the road. And of course, the season itself, you are away, you're doing camps, you're spending time in hotels, and you are just away from home. And it's, as you say, an individual sport. So how do you cope with being on your own all the time? Are you comfortable as an independent person?
And with your own? I mean, you learn to be independent, because there was a year where I did about 270 days on the road. Wow. And if you're Austrian, you can go and train and you can go home. Whereas if you're British, you have to go to Europe, and then you're in apartments and sometimes hotels. But we normally try and do apartments because it's a bit more, you can do what you want, have meals when you want. You learn to become independent. But it's really good when some other guys are around that can bring some energy and bring a good vibe, because then that helps everyone.
How do you switch off at the end of a day then? Because you get back, probably have some food, and then do you just, because you're literally probably there on the mountain or near enough.
Yeah,
you know, snow's going to always be around you. But how do you switch off? What do you do to chill out?
You just mong out. You just find yourself doing, the time flies when you're doing, when you've completed YouTube about 4 times. You know, you just switch off, and just, I tend to probably have an hour where I just watch something that's just easy watching. I'll then do some physical training as well in the afternoon, or you play cards with the team. Yeah, you find ways. Fantasy football becomes the hot topic, and your mood swings on fantasy football the more than what they are in a World Cup slalom. So yeah, it gets intense.
Yeah, for sure. Now, obviously something else that I'm going off here on the road is your partner cannot be with you all the time at all, by any stretch of it. And I can only assume that is frustrating. There are moments of elation in skiing and moments of, just being somber in a camp. As amazing and fantastic as your coach and support staff are, do you have a support bubble that you kind of stay in regular contact with just to make sure that you're checking in and making sure that you're okay?
Yeah, I mean, my fiance is my main support and has been through my whole career and fully understands it, which is very fortunate for me. And to be honest, if I didn't have a partner who understood what I do and just fully let me chase my dreams as such, I'm not sure I would be as successful as I was, because it's fine when things are going well at home, not even on this, but when it's tough at home, very rarely will she put any pressure on me. Okay, there's times where I have to, like if she's struggling or whatever, but yeah, unbelievable, unwavering support. And yeah, if I've had a good day, try to be the first person I'll call before I've even got my ski boots off or whatever. So yeah, try and share my emotion after a race. If it's bad, then obviously she gets called first as well.
Yeah, sure.
And yeah, I'm sure it's quite stressful for her because she can't do much from the UK. And while, well, last year was very tough to get anyone out anyway because of the restrictions, but it's very good to have her at races because it generally calms me down in terms of, you know, it's just nice to have someone around. Or even when my coach's family's out there, he's got two kids, it's just nice to have that around because it takes your mind off the skiing. Yeah, it's just nicer. But yeah, it's tough on the road, but at the same time, very fortunate she's understanding of it.
So you just said there that she's understanding because she understands skiing. Did you meet on the snow?
She's Dutch and we met ski racing. She doesn't race now, but so she gets chasing your dream as a ski racer, and that's what she wanted to do. Unfortunately, didn't manage it herself, but therefore she kind of gets what I'm doing and appreciates that. Yeah, it's my dream, and I keep saying, you know, once I finish skiing, we'll do this, that, and the other, and I'm still skiing. So it's a big sacrifice from her for me to, because she lives in the UK as well now. So.
Yeah. But as you say, she does understand your narrative and your journey at this stage.
Exactly. Yeah.
So just whilst we were just talking about emotions there briefly, I want to talk about finishing on the high of finishing on a World Cup stage or competing at the Olympics. I can only imagine what those emotions are like. But when you are at the Olympics, how do you learn to just not just go, I am at the Olympics right now? How do you manage to control yourself and your emotions to perform on such a stage with millions watching?
Yeah, it's you just try and get in your normal routine that you would have for any other race. There's obviously a lot more pressure. There's a lot more, the spotlight's bigger on you. Yeah, so it is tough, and I do find it a little bit harder to deal with the pressure to perform. But you get your routines, and you just, as soon as you get on the snow, you're in your training routine, or on the race day, you just click into your race routine. So I've raced so many times, go into that routine, and then you just trust yourself. And I was actually thinking at the last Olympics, I was thinking, you know, this is going to be my third Olympics. On the day, I won't be nervous. You rock up at the start because you can't actually ski the course before you race it. You're only allowed to slide through it to look at it. And I remember turning up at the start thinking, yeah, that theory's out the window because I'm absolutely, you know, it's squeaky bum time. Here we go.
Yeah. Do you enjoy the experience then? Do you even have time to enjoy the experience? Because you actually have to kind of detach yourself from the significance of the event.
Yeah, I wouldn't say I've gone to the Olympics and thoroughly enjoyed it because I'm not there for the opening. My event is always the last event. So I'm not there for the opening ceremony. I'm training really hard leading up to it. And I turn up probably halfway through the Olympics already. So yeah, it's very much right. I need to get in my zone, make sure my body's in good shape for, say, the Sunday. Make sure, yeah, illness is massive. You don't want to get ill. So many people in one place, it happens.
I bet.
So a lot of pressure to stay fit, stay healthy, train and be ready. And then, boom, it's over and you're going home. And then we're normally racing again a week after in the World Cup. So you just don't have time.
That's really interesting. Really, really interesting. Now, you talked there that you've changed equipment suppliers and then switched back again. Are you back now with Dinastar? Is that right?
I'm back with Fisher now.
So you're back with Fisher. You were.
And I've gone back to Fisher.
Right. So now I'm interested to ask you, how does this and that choice affect different skiers? How do you choose and become to know what manufacturer to go with?
So I was with Fisher for like 5 years. It was everything was working well. But then coming to the end of that, I was doubting myself and maybe the equipment. And it came to me that it was after the last Olympics. And I thought, you know, clear the mind, fresh start. Try the other brand. I tested it before I went, and I had one good season and one bad season. Oh, not bad, but I would drop to 14th. So yeah, I'd never felt comfortable really in myself on that equipment. So it was a case of, right, I've tried something, I've given it a go, I'm going back to what I think is better for me. And I really felt comfortable again in myself when I was skiing, which for me is the most important thing, because while it's results based, you want to feel like I'm here to perform and I can perform because I feel comfortable in my setup.
Totally. Now, just whilst we're on equipment, I'm not asking you to preach to the choir at all, but I mean, how obviously important is it for any recreational skier to be wearing a helmet?
Oh, well, yeah. I mean, yeah, it's just, you don't see many people anymore without helmets on. Even the coaches are wearing helmets now. So you probably see 2% of people on the slopes without a helmet on now. So it's just not worth the risk. And the helmets are so comfortable. Mm. Goggles on. It's just a done thing now. And I personally would never ski without a helmet, even after racing, because I've just always had a helmet on. So no chance am I.
Well, they're also incredibly comfortable. And also, anyone that wears a beanie and says that it's warmer than a helmet is lying. I'm sure of it.
Yeah.
Oh, totally. Now, as we just come down to the end of this, I feel I need to ask you the question. Not that I'm asking for this to happen, for your skiing career to end, but what does the future hold after skiing? Do you think you'll move back to the UK permanently?
Well, I actually live in the UK now. I love the UK. Whenever I can get home in the season, I come back to the UK.
I'm more meant because your fiancé is Dutch. I didn't know if that was an option.
Yeah. Could be. It could be an option, but... we'll see. We'll see what the future holds. I'm not, no plans except for this next year to the Olympics, and then we'll see what's going on.
So I ask this question to every guest that comes on the podcast. What does the word headstrong mean to you?
Headstrong to me, I mean, it's just, I would say being able to deal with everything that life throws at you. Because the older you become, the more problems you seem to get, whether it be in sport or in life. So it's just, yeah, dealing with the problems, trying to enjoy your life and realizing what makes you tick. Because at the end of the day, we're not here for a long time in the grand scheme of things. So, yeah, get through, make life as good as you can by dealing with adversity.
Nice. Really appreciate it. All right, Dave. Well, look, thank you so much for coming on. I really appreciate it. Thanks for being so honest and having a good old chat with me.
No problem. Thank you.
It's great to have teamed up with The Good Level, a British CBD company who share a similar ethos to that of Headstrong. The Good Level co-founders, Joe and Johnny, believe in CBD as it's helped them and their families with their physical and mental well-being. Whether that's using their balms to recover from physical exercise, or using their oils to manage stress and anxiety, or to get a better night's sleep, The Good Level has well-being at the very centre of their brand. As we've partnered up with them for this season, you can get a 15% discount off all their orders using Headstrong15 at checkout. And if you're not sure about CBD yet, no worries. Joe and Johnny are always happy to chat and answer all your questions. You can contact them via their website or check out their Instagram at the.good.level. And that's Headstrong15 at checkout. And that's it for this episode of Headstrong. A huge thank you to Dave Riding for joining me. It was an absolutely brilliant episode, and I hope that you found it insightful and engaging, and indeed learnt a lot about the skiing world and how to get into it here in the UK. Join me next week for another episode of Headstrong. Please do rate, subscribe, and pass the pod. Every little helps.
Hold up. What was that? Boring. No flavor. That was as bad as those leftovers you ate all week. Keke Palmer here. And it's time to say hello to something fresh and guilt-free. HelloFresh. Jazz up dinner with pecan-crusted chicken or garlic butter shrimp scampi. Now that's music to my mouth. HelloFresh. Let's get this dinner party started. Discover all the delicious possibilities at HelloFresh.com.
Tired of ads interfering with your favorite sports podcasts? Good news. Ad-free listening is available on Amazon Music for all the music plus top podcasts included with your Prime membership. Stay ahead of the game by downloading the Amazon Music app for free
or go to amazon.com/sportsadfree. That's amazon.com/sportsadfree to catch up on the latest episodes without the ads.
Planning for your next trip?
Elevate your travel style with Quince.
Quince has all the jet-setting essentials you'll want for your next getaway, like European linen, premium luggage options, buttery soft Italian leather bags, and so much more. And it's all priced at 50 to 80% less than similar brands. Plus, Quince only works with factories that use safe and ethical manufacturing practices. Pack your bags with high-quality essentials you'll be wearing for vacations to come with Quince. Go to quince.com/pack for free shipping and 365-day returns.